This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to this Joy 94.9 podcast.
We want to hear from you.
It's time for our listener survey. So head to the Joy website and let us know what you love about the station and your presenters.
Maybe you'd like to share your thoughts on Joy's program production team, the volunteers behind Joy Podcasts.
The results of this survey will assist us in continuing to be the best possible station we can be.
Head to joy.org.au and have your say. Joy 94.9, your voice, your radio station.
Melbourne's Night of Nights was held on Monday night. The Age Good Food Guide Awards were announced for 2017. I have the guide's editor sitting in front of me about to unveil all manner of news about the selection process. And two winners from the night as well sitting in the studio. Not our usual suspects, I might add. An interesting discussion between now and 2 o'clock. Stay tuned. Yes, good afternoon. We are talking cravings. 6 minutes past one right here on Joy 94.9. Turn on your microphone, Pete. The day that we celebrate all things good food in Melbourne. The Age Good Food Guide Awards were announced on Monday night, and if you haven't caught up with the news, you're about to. In the studio, the guide's editor, Roz Grundy. Welcome back. We seem to be making a habit of this each year.
Let's do that.
We can do that, indeed. Casey Wall is here from Bar Liberty. Casey, welcome.
Thank you.
And Caterina Borsato from Caterina's Cucina e Bar. Welcome.
Grazie.
Both of you recipients of awards on Monday night. And I wanted to kick off with a question about surprise. And I asked Roz, was she surprised with the results? She went, well, Roz, it's a bit difficult, isn't it, to be surprised?
Yeah, when you're really up close to it, it seems like a natural decision. Although, as I said, when we were off air, it wasn't until the guide was all done and dusted and someone else from outside looked at it and said, hey, you've got a lot of regional winners this year. And we went, oh, yeah, we do too. So it wasn't a conscious thing, but the regional restaurants have really shone in the Good Food Guide this year.
Well, they have. You've got Bray at Birragara as Restaurant of the Year.
Yeah.
Best Chef of the Year. Was
Aaron Turner
from Igni in Geelong.
And he was also the
best new regional.
Thank you. Thank you for helping me out there. And also, of course, the regional wine list of the year has got to go to a regional person, but that was Provenance up in Beechworth.
So, yeah, there's a very good representation of what's happening in the regions, and I think we should be very proud that regional Victoria is so strong.
I think it shows the depth of the overall industry here in Victoria, that we have not just fantastic restaurants in the city, which you'd kind of expect in a cosmopolitan city like Melbourne.
The world's most livable city.
But also that we have really fantastic restaurants out in regional Victoria is another good sign, I think, and it shows just how good the industry is. And it's something that doesn't happen, say, in New South Wales to the same extent, which I'm kind of...
There's probably one or two in New South Wales, if you look at Muse and Biota. And that's probably the strength of it.
Yeah.
We're seeing more and more happen in Victoria, in regional Victoria.
Yeah. Am I not close enough to the mic there? All right, I'll
talk
up. I
would like you to be more comfortable, that's all. So that sort of kind of is a bit of a surprise. What's the biggest challenge in putting the guide together? I imagine on Tuesday your email and your phone might have been running hot.
Yes, mostly people saying, why did I lose a hat, or why did I not get a hat? Those are the main questions, really. And also, why aren't I in the guide? And we made a big change, you know, quite a fundamental change this year by only having places that scored 14 out of 20 or above in the guide, whereas in previous years we've had places at maybe 12 out of 20, 13 out of 20. So a big change. A lot of people got left out, unfortunately.
Is that because there's more in the guide?
So what we've done is, because we've kind of raised the benchmark for getting in there, it's freed up a bit of space to have more cafes and bars and cheap eats, and I think that probably reflects more how we're all eating now. When not many of us can afford to eat in those sort of hatted restaurants.
Well,
on a regular basis,
yeah, exactly.
No. And so we wanted to expand the options for cafes and bars, and because we're eating a lot more in bars as well, as maybe Casey can talk about.
Well, Casey, congratulations, first of all, on the award for Bar Liberty.
Thank you.
What does it mean? Did your phone ring hot on Tuesday morning with bookings all of a sudden?
We don't take bookings, so no.
I guess we
take bookings for like tables of six or more, only because there's only two tables of six you can really sit at in the restaurant. It's pretty small. We're working on a bigger room upstairs, maybe for a private dining room, which should be open in maybe 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. We got a lot of congratulations, a lot of people inquiring about the wine list, which is
pretty impressive.
I don't think it necessarily changed anything for us, because we've lucked up and had a pretty good run at it so far.
Yes, and you're always busy.
Most of the time.
Always busy, but they've also got a crack team. It's not like they're sort of blow-ins who have never done anything great before. The team there.
So
a lot of ex-Attica people.
I was going to say, a lot of ex-Attica. So Banjo Harris Plain, Michael Bichetta, yourself.
And Manu. Manu worked at Attica for a little while. He's my business partner at Rockwell & Sons. We actually have more staff that own the restaurant than we employ. So it's like four owners and three.
Which is a good thing. Your wage cost, you imagine, is slightly low. Or is it you've all got to pay yourselves because you're all superstars?
Mostly it's blown out of whack because of Banjo's ego. But that's
yes, right.
I told him I'd take one shot at him on air today.
So. There you go. Hello, Banjo. Katarina, you won the Service Excellence Award.
I was really humbled, I have to say. It wasn't something that I was expecting. Because when you go into business, you don't go out expecting to get awards, I guess. And there were so many people in the room, and I actually said, I don't think any of you know who I actually am, you know, which is when you said there was the not usual suspects. Mm. And it was quite amazing. And I think people, I've been around for so long that, you know, you just fall in amongst the cracks, you know, because I'm always there. So it's lovely to be recognised. Thank you.
It's very easy often to acknowledge the squeaky wheel or the new kid
shiny
on the block.
New thing.
You know, it's very easy to go, oh, let's give that Service Excellence Award to some bright new thing. And to actually be able to give that award to someone who's been doing beautiful things for a very long time and making a lot of people happy over many, many years. Oh, it was really nice.
Thank you.
It does warm the heart.
Right. To be honest, I have to say, I received a phone call from a lady who must be in her 80s, and Ray Sindos from the Mr. Sindos June called me, and I was really emotional because she said to me, Katarina, I just want to tell you that 30 years ago that was me. You were me. I know what that feels like. And she said, you need to enjoy it because it only comes once. That's what she said to me, and she said, I know what it's like when they recognise what you do, because it's a bit of an ungrateful job sometimes. You turn up, we don't have manicured hands.
No.
Whether you're sick, you've got to go in, and all the other dramas that happen. So, yeah, beautiful.
I think it's richly deserved as well. We're going to take a short little sojourn and be back with Ros Grundy, with Casey Wall and Katarina Borsato. You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9. It is a quarter past one. It's 19 degrees outside. The view from my office here is stunning. A lovely day, and I have lovely people in this studio. Caterina Borsato from Caterina's Cucina e Bar. The Service Excellence Award winner from the Age Good Food Guide. Casey Wall is here from Bar Liberty, also an award winner on Monday night, and Ros Grundy, editor of the Good Food Guide, in front of me as well. You were just, Caterina, you hinted about longevity, and I think, Ros, the award for the Legend Award for that was presented to the guys from Francois really sort of emphasizes, I think, what Caterina was saying, that I think they've got something like 80% of their staff were there on opening day 31 or 32 years ago. Is it hard to sit down and sort of look who has to be the legend this year?
Well, each year we've got a short list, they can go from year to year. So you can have people on your short list this year, and you go, oh, they didn't get it this year. All right, we'll put them forward for next year.
Yep.
That is an award that we make up a short list. We make a case for each person on that award, and then we send it to our sponsors, and they make a decision on who they think it should go to. Right. So the final decision is theirs from a short list that we draw up. So, you know, every year, of course, you're looking for people who have been around for a long time, who have been maintaining their standard for a long time, and you can't speak higher of someone, restaurateurs who have been around for 30 years, still with the original owner, with a chef who's been in that kitchen doing the hard yards for 22 years.
And before that 22 years, he was a sous chef, I think, before. Yeah,
that's right. They've only had two head chefs in their 30 years, and the one who won it, or was the co-winner, was, still there. It's exactly. Amazing.
Casey, how does that strike you, 28, 30 years in one place?
Oh,
as one of the modern young crew that Caterina has alluded to, does that terrify you? Would you find that stilting?
He's not answering. Look, he's thinking.
Yeah,
it doesn't terrify me. But I think that it's kind of a classic, timeless restaurant. What we do at Bar Liberty will probably have to seriously evolve over 28 years to stay open for 28 years, or
Do you think you will?
Be open for 28 years? Yeah. I mean, realistically, I'd say no, but...
but you've already evolved in the short time that you've been open. It's changed a little bit.
Yeah, I think... We just go to work every day and try to get better. Not saying we're a perfect restaurant by any stretch of the imagination, but we always talk about what we can improve on, why. It's a really collaborative effort. When I think of a new dish, I have three really... well-traveled, knowledgeable people to say yes or no to dishes, and we collaborate. Same thing with cocktails, and Benji will bring in a wine. Like, do we like this? Do we want to sell it by the glass or by the bottle? And stuff like that. So it's pretty awesome to work in that environment, and we kind of collectively grow. It's not just, four different egos just pontificating.
Well, four different egos never work.
No, you'd be pulling the blanket from every direction, and three people are going to be cold in the night.
Caterina, have you had to evolve in the time you've been in business? Do you sort
God,
of...
yes, I got rid of that disgusting carpet I had there. It took me years. No. You know, there's always things you hate about your place.
Yeah.
But, there's the economic reality. I know one restaurateur said to me one day, God, Caterina, it must be hard for you because you've got to worry about everything all by yourself. And I have to make decisions by myself because I'm a sole owner. And, of course, as you know, I'm also a mother. So I've got other things, and I do my work on community TV, which my husband does. He's from a musical background. So I wear a couple of hats, and we only do 5 lunches a week. So to make it all work and to get enough money together to funk up the place or get new artwork, that takes time. Mm. So, yes, I have evolved. I've evolved as a person. I mean, I've just done my first level sommelier's course in Italy. Last year, in my 50s, people say to me, how long does it take you to put together a wine list? I went, 30 years.
Yeah, exactly, because that's got to evolve with
absolutely.
Changing. How much do changing trends influence us, Ros? If you think about putting together a wine list or trying to construct a menu, And Casey, I think you had some input on this as well. You know, how do we think about where those trends come from? Who do we look to see? I was talking about bugs and things before. Who do we look to for influence? Do you look to your mates nearby? Do you look overseas? Are you all constantly reading books from overseas of what comes next? Where's the inspiration come from?
Personally, I don't really. I mean, obviously, I respect heaps of restaurants and my friends and stuff, and you'll see something they're doing interesting, and I think it's disrespectful to, you know, take that idea and try to copy it or replicate it. Of course, there's some parallels where you make a dish and you think you've created something, and then you see on Instagram someone's, like, pretty similar and, like, with no contact or anything, you're like, oh, how did... You know, I thought I was the first one on that one, but it doesn't really happen. There's a couple chef friends of mine, Gregory Llewellyn from Hartshard in Sydney. We always talk back and forth about dishes. Some of the bigger groups, you know, there's a lot more brains and stuff to bounce ideas off of. So Greg will text me at 2 in the morning, and I usually reply at 6 a.m. when I get up to go for a ride, and that's it. And we'll talk about ideas, like, do you think this will work? I say yes or no, and same thing for him. And
you draw on your own heritage, and Katerina, I guess you do too. So it's probably some trends, some new ideas, but also some drawing on your own roots. Would that be right?
Yeah, for sure. There's some techniques that I grew up with, I mean, being from the South, that are different, but a lot of that's snuck in. On the back of a really great chef, Sean Brock. He's kind of made those techniques more...
incredible, yes. We all bow to Sean Brock.
More accessible to the world through his own personal connection as well. So it's good to see that stuff coming out and around the world and some techniques, but it's... I think now, I don't know, it's collaborative, but it's also... There's so much social media, it's hard to...
It's hard to ignore it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
For me, look, you know, my family's Venetian, and I don't think I realised how much influence my mother and my father, who was one of the early waiters at the Society restaurant, you know, was iconic, and I don't think I realised how important an influence they had on me, because I see the cinnamon and the nutmeg and all the stuff coming through my food. That was always my mother. And I don't think I was aware of that until much later. And when we went back last year to film in Northern Italy, we filmed this fantastic dish with this woman in Marostica in this town square, which was confit duck done with all the green herbs and liver and stuff. And I brought that back, and it's been on my menu. I can't take it off. I mean, you know, I was just thinking to myself, isn't that funny? It was what my mother used to do. I grew up on a farm with chickens and pheasants and all that stuff. And suddenly here it is on my menu. So, yes, I do draw upon my roots, absolutely.
Roz, a question for you first before I open it to the other two. Are we going to see bugs on plates? And I don't mean Balmain or Moreton Bay bugs. I got an invitation the other day to an event that's going to be done with things like crickets and various other types of bugs. Is that the future of the industry?
Look, in my heart, I can see an intellectual argument for it, because I think it's got to be more sustainable, they're full of protein and all of that sort of thing. Sure, I can say yes on an intellectual level, but from my heart, from my gut, no, I don't think so. I just can't see us getting really right on board with bugs in any kind of a big way. I've eaten crickets, and as I think I said, they're delicious if you deep fry them. As is anything, really.
Yeah, Mars bars delicious if you deep fry it.
Yeah, but I just don't think that the general public are going to accept it widely. I'd be interested to know what you guys think.
Katerina, I'm going to start with you. I mentioned snails earlier, and I think they're like a bug. And you said the Europeans have been eating snails for a very long time.
That's a good point. Well, for me, snails are very French and they're very Italian. And having grown up a farm in Gippsland, my grandmother, when she was alive, that's what we had. You know, it was free, it was inexpensive, so you know, and you know, it was there. It was part of nature, so we didn't think twice about it. Crickets, I would find that difficult. I think they can be trends, and then you can do some probably amazing snack foods, Casey. But I don't know whether it'll be something that's completely long lived. I don't think so, actually.
Put a truffled salt on some crickets; it'll taste good. Put truffled salt on anything, Casey. How does this evolve? You know, from a food van serving some crickets. You know, we know Alex Atala from from Doc in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, has done a pineapple with ants as a dish, features in his book. Is it a direction that we could go in, do you think?
I don't think so. Only because it's not what a lot of people want to eat. It's too squeamish. It's too you'll get people eating them, trying them, adventurous. You know, when someone like Renee at Noma says, eat these ants, you're going to eat them. You've paid a lot of money. You're not going to skip a course for them. So I think they have their place. And but it won't. We were saying off air that I think, you know, if you start using bugs in the menu, people start saying, oh, you're copying Renee or you're copying Alex or something like that. And I think a lot of the high-end chefs, you know, the two-hat restaurants want to kind of make their own identity and don't want to be accused of taking someone else's idea.
Yeah, they're so conscious of already being compared at that level that if they did something as, you know, obvious as bugs, it would be very easy to level an accusation that they're
I think it was my father who said there's no such thing as a new idea in food, is there?
That's true.
You know, there's a limited amount of ingredients and a limited amount of ways that you can prepare them.
Every year I'm surprised by what chefs are doing with ingredients that we thought we already knew backwards and forwards. And you were saying about that poultry dish, Katerina. It's something that obviously your people have been doing for a very long time, and now people are coming to your restaurant maybe never have seen that before, and for them that's brand new.
And it's brand new. Mm. Well, I don't know if it was Marco Pierre-White that once said that if a great chef can create one dish in his lifetime, he's doing really well. Because let's face it, it's a rehash of ideas and then you put your spin on it. Would that be a fair call, Casey?
I feel like there's new dishes and new ideas coming out. Like the Nordic Food Lab, they're researching stuff all the time and working with yeast and kojis and bacteria and this. And yeah, these are traditional techniques, but they're being applied in a completely different way. In a completely different, I mean, was it Dave Chang has his own chickpea miso now going on? It bottled in probably like Whole Foods and stuff in the States. Like it's something that's not traditional, but these techniques open the doors to so much more. Like everything's grounded in technique, but
and,
you can create.
And those techniques are grounded in history because that's the way food was preserved before we had an industrial revolution.
And I think a lot of the new ideas and the guys really pushing the envelope are trying to create something new with technique, not make the best caviar dish or make the best, you know what I mean? Like it's not so much the luxe ingredients now that are getting looked at. It's what technique, what can we create, what's our own, our own ideas.
Our interpretation. 28 minutes past one here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. Casey Wall, Ros Grundy, Katerina Bosato with me. There's much more to come. Stay with me.
Hi, I'm Manny Fidel, and you are with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Yes, you are at 1:30, Saturday afternoon, 19 degrees, beautiful day in Melbourne, and a beautiful day right here in the studio. We are talking about the Age Good Food Guide Awards. Ros Grundy is the editor. She's here in front of me. Jared de Blasi from Ezard was the winner of the Young Chef of the Year. What's the process?
So every year the chefs who think that they have what it takes apply, and I send them out an application form, and basically they have to kind of write a little, not an essay about themselves, but they have to fill in a bit of a sheet, who their influences are, who they'd like to work with in 5 years, or where they see themselves. So, you know, they really have to think quite deeply about their role, where they're going, what they're all about, and articulate that, which, you know, for some chefs is
very difficult,
quite difficult for them. I mean, anyway, it is quite a difficult thing. And they send us a photo of a signature dish and tell us a little bit about how that evolved and so on. So it's the initial stage is an application form, and we sift through those and we pick the ones. I shortlist them down to about 10 or 12, and send that to our judging panel, which every year is chaired by Arla Wolf-Tasker from Lake House, who just works so hard at it and takes it so seriously. Oh, just God bless her.
She does that with everything.
I know.
Everything
she,
about Ella
she gives
is,
110% yeah. to everything.
Yep.
So Ella and then the other judges changed year by year depending on their commitment. So often it's Andrew McConnell, but because he had the new restaurant on the way, he didn't do it this year, but...
He's always got a new restaurant.
I know, pretty much every year. When, yeah. How does he do it? But anyway, that's another story.
I used to make a
story.
Joke about Karen Martini. Every time I spoke to her, it was either a new baby or a new book. and now it's the same with Andrew.
Yes. Mm. And this year we had Frank Camora from Movida and Philippe Michel, the great Philippe Michel, judging, and also Jemima Cody. This year we had someone from The Age on that panel because in the past we've always had the three chefs, but we wanted someone really who would then be able to tell the story afterwards, know what went on in that discussion room. And they call all of their shortlisted chefs in and grill them. And, boy, they give them quite a grilling. Mm. And from that list, they decide who are the finalists. And it was Jared de Blasi from Ezard, as you say, this
and quite
year.
Quite an esteemed group of young chefs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Buddha Lowe from
Mateo's. Jake Kelly from Lakeside Mill. Mm. Who else? I'm going to forget some, and it's not because they weren't terrific. Ved from Tonka.
Yes.
Gosh, I can't remember the other one. I should have the list in front of
me. Young fellow from Oh My again. Was he in there?
He may have been. Yeah.
Yes, whose name I forget. There's three brothers out there. Fantastic young
Bert family. And Shelley, is it?
Yes. Yeah. And if we look at the past few years, I think Josh Pelham was young chef of the year 15. He's now working for Hellenic for George,
that's
formerly
right.
with Scott Pickett.
Daniel Wilson.
Daniel Wilson, Huxterburger, Huxtable Collective. I'm just trying to think. Was it from the Town Mouse 2016?
Yes, he's overseas and unfortunately wasn't able to collect his award last year because he'd buzzed off overseas for his...
What's his name, Casey? Remember?
George.
That's him.
Tomlin.
Yeah, George Tomlin. So it's a really good stepping stone.
Yeah, it is a really good stepping stone. There's... In Sydney,
Adam
there's
DeSilva,
a...
Silver was the young chef of the year?
I think he was.
About 100 years ago.
Oh, that's not kind. I'll tell him you said that.
Oh, no, I'll tell him as well. That's right.
No, there have been some terrific people over the years. And it's really only about the glory. They don't get any money or anything. They really only get a pat on the back, which I'd love to be able to put money behind it. We just need a sponsor who is willing to stump up, maybe give them an airfare over to Europe so they can do some stages or something like that. That'd be awesome. So any sponsors out there, step forward.
Exactly.
Yeah. It is a nice pat on the back, though, to get that recognition.
It is. Casey, from your point of view, those you probably know most of these young chefs because you I assume you guys hang out in the industry in some way or another.
You have so much free time, don't you?
At 3 o'clock in the morning when everybody else is trying to sleep. Is it considered by the industry as prestigious?
Yes, because it gets a lot of buzz around it. I haven't been in Melbourne entirely long. It's not something I came up with. Maybe I don't fully understand it. But everyone talks about it, and it's very... congratulatory, and people are pretty...
You would imagine that if somebody came and knocked on your door and said, I want a job and I'm the 2016-2017 Young Chef of the Year, is that going to influence your decision in hiring them?
Depends on the role. but yeah, it can't hurt. I mean, once you win that award, your name's out there, and people are going to start keeping you in the back of their mind when they're looking at places.
Katerina, would it make a difference to you?
Well, I think that when anybody ever applies for a job, I always look where they've worked and I always cross-check it. Now, I know there's always two sides to every story, but if you see, you know, a well-known restaurant that you actually believe in and you know they've been doing a good job, well, you know you're going to push them up that list, you know, provided that they fit into the team and everything else. I think that they're important awards. Sometimes, as I said, it's a very thankless job. They do these grueling hours in the kitchen, and it's nice when it's their time to shine. And, yeah, you know, give them a stage overseas. I mean, when they're young. I wish I had that when I was coming through the ranks.
Yeah.
Is there any elitism associated with the guide?
Yeah, probably.
A perception of elitism?
I would think so. I mean, I think that people would think that, oh, I can't afford to eat in those restaurants. It's only ever the expensive restaurants that win the awards, blah, blah, blah. Which, well, you know...
That's bloody common sense, though.
That well, and also, oh, you only ever have places in the inner city winning awards. Well, you know, the fact is most of the really good places are in the inner city. If you're a great restaurateur, you're not going to necessarily set up in Pakenham as your first choice, unless there's a particular reason you're looking at that.
I used to have a bit of a bitch each year, and I think I was quite public with you as well as Jan, the previous editor, around the fact that there were rarely any women nominated for Chef of the Year. I know Philippa Sibley was in there this year from Syracuse, and I was very pleased to see that. Is that simply by virtue of the fact that there's not a lot of women?
No, I think, as I said to you last year, we would love to be giving those awards to more women, but there aren't very many women who keep going at that level to be in those kitchens.
So the criteria for Chef of the Year...
Mm. So I can read it to you if you like. I have it on my little scruffy pieces of paper.
You knew I was going to go here, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I just happened to have it. So to acknowledge those with the craft and ability to make a real difference to the way we dine now and in the future. So it is about a bit of a legacy. It is about being a bit influential. So it is more likely to go to a chef who's doing something different. Doesn't have to be a man, doesn't have to be a woman, just someone who's...
It's a merit rather than
merit.
A...
Merit, yeah.
Casey, are there enough women in kitchens in your mind that could be elevated to that level? If we look overseas and think about some of those incredible women who are shaping the way Europeans eat, are we going to get to that point, do you think? Are we going to catch up?
There seems to be more... females in kitchens now than there was when I started cooking. You know, there's been a thousand articles about why there aren't women at the top. I won't rehash any of those. I think there will be. I do believe that the industry is changing and it's not as sexist. I won't say it isn't sexist, but
because you'd be wrong if it
is. But I do. There's a lot of really young. Female cooks that I know that I'd be interested to see what they're doing in a few years once they've gone through the ranks of learning everything.
Ros, just before I come to Katerina on the same question, were there any nominations for Young Chef of the Year from women?
No women, not one single woman nominated herself for Young Chef of the Year. And this next year I'd love to put a special call out for young women to put themselves forward, because why aren't they putting themselves forward? What is it about their maybe lack of confidence or their lack of encouragement for them from the places that they're working that they're not putting themselves forward?
And I think there's enough industry listeners to the program that will take that on board.
If you know a talented young woman under 30 as of something like September 30th next year who is you think's a real gun, please encourage them to apply for that. I'd love it.
Katerina, I'm assuming you're sitting there nodding. You'd want to see a female chef of the year?
Oh, absolutely. I think about when I started, and it was a really male-dominated world. You know, I came down to Melbourne from the country when I was 17 and started, and I can honestly say I had a really rough ride. It was really, I was beaten around the head because as a woman, I think it was very different. Now, women have a lot of respect out there because it's about their craft. Whether it is because they go away and have babies, because let's face it, if that's something that you do, and look, lots of my girlfriends don't have babies, but if it's something, it's going to give an interruption to your career. And, of course, to be at the top of your career, you can't have interruptions. That's the problem.
But I want to think back to, because I think you and I are of a reasonably similar vintage.
I think I'm older than you.
not by much. There were incredible women around when I was an apprentice chef. There was Stephanie Alexander. Yeah. There was Tansy. There was Mieta O'Donnell. Yeah. There was a coterie of very...
prominent chefs and restaurateurs.
Yeah, that were women. And it... That's sort of why I'm curious that it seems to have paled in the last couple of decades, and there's probably less women we can talk about on a national stage even, apart from the Karen Martini and Kylie Kwong, Chrissy Manfield. There's probably a dozen female chefs at that level. I would dearly love to see a bigger coterie of female chefs because I think they're probably better than blokes in the kitchen. As a former chef, I'm quite comfortable in saying that.
Some of the awards overseas, though, the World's 50 Best and so on, often have a special category, Best Female Chef, and the fact that you have to have a special category...
It says a lot about where the industry is at.
Pete, I also think that when you were talking about that, when you were naming those women, of course, they were in fairly... upmarket iconic restaurants. What's happening out there is that the market is now changing, and so you can have amazing chefs in cafes, in bars. That I think that there's a changing market out there which will actually help women.
And we can have cafes with red ants on scrambled eggs for breakfast, Casey.
It'll happen before another three-hat restaurant puts ants on dishes.
There you go. There's a prediction.
You heard it here first.
17 minutes to your own cravings here on Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Anna De Silva, and you're listening to Cravings with Pete Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
It's 2:15. We are talking the Age Good Food Guide, and I have with me Roz Grundy, who is the editor of the Good Food Guide, Casey Wolf from Bar Liberty, and Rockwell & Sons. I should have said that earlier, because you juggle two kitchens.
Yeah, kind of. Mostly Bar Liberty now. We have a really good team at Rockwell. Blake's the head chef there now, and he's been a friend of mine for a few years, and he's absolutely killing it, and having a blast. So.
Excellent. And Caterina Borsato from Caterina's Cucina e Bar, who is the Service Excellence Award winner, and not one of the new kids on the block, we can happily say, I think, without offending you.
Yeah, absolutely not. And as I said, I'm sure there were a lot of people there that night that didn't even know who I was. And so thank you. I have to really thank the guide. I think one thing I did say was the fact that this is my second business, but they've been kind enough to put me in the guide every year of my business life. And that is actually a really big deal for me personally. We don't sit out looking for accolades and awards. The fact that I can stay in business is probably the most important thing to me at this point. And you're also mentoring lots of people, and that's such a buzz for me because I'm getting towards the end of my working life. You know, I'm not in the middle of it. I'm in my 50s. No, but, you know, that's the reality. Getting home at 2 a.m., Pete, that's killing me.
Yeah, I know. I'm hearing you. I have a night at an event, and if I'm not home by midnight, I feel like I'm going to just turn into a pumpkin.
There you go.
Which is probably explained.
After the Age Good Food Guide Awards, normally I would kick on, but I was absolutely emotionally drained and wiped out, and I didn't kick on. And
I shouldn't have kicked on, but I did.
Oh, dear. I would have loved to have. There you go.
I'd walked out the door of the awards, and I was sort of thinking I was on my way home, and there was a taxi, and there was people hanging out of the taxi saying, come on, we're going to the same place we went last year, and a number of Negronis and vodkas later, I was still going. And I got up to work on Tuesday morning. I went to work and walked into the office and thought, oh, God, I really shouldn't be here. I've not had enough sleep. Cafe of the Year, Best Cheap Eats, those sorts of awards that have made their way into the guide and not the high-end restaurants that we've become used to. How important is that representation for small business?
I imagine from a marketing perspective it's probably very important for them. They probably don't get as much recognition, obviously, as Restaurant of the Year or Chef of the Year, but it is a nice pat on the back for any of those businesses that are, you know, doing the same sort of work, you know, on a smaller scale.
Well, Casey, from your point of view, you're a small business. How many seats?
Ooh, at Bar Liberty, currently we have 36.
So that's you're a small operation in the big scheme of things.
Yes.
You talked about there's a nice bit of congratulations about them. And I assume as people thumb through the guide, it's only been out a week, as people thumb through the guide, they're going to go, oh, Bar Liberty, I haven't tried that. It's in the guide. I'm going to go and check it out.
Yeah, we've gotten some new customers in. It's been 50-50 whether they, I wouldn't say enjoyed it or understood what we were doing. It's a 50-50 if they understand what we are trying to do at Bar Liberty.
What is it you're trying to do at Bar Liberty? Give me an elevator pitch.
We're just making stuff that we want to eat and serving it with wine and cocktails that we want to drink and beers. And I think Yeah, there's a bit of education with Banjo and his wine list and what he wants to do for what he's passionate about in the
How
wine.
How many of his wines are natural orange?
Oh, they don't have to be orange to be natural.
How many of the wines are natural wines?
I would say it's probably about a 50-50 split of a 200 bottle list, and you can get anything. There's classics there. It's not all natural wine. Yeah. You can have.
I'm quite funny about these natural wines because I've tasted very few that are decent. Most of them taste and smell like old shoes.
I may be
a traditionalist.
Yeah. If I leave it to the sommelier to suggest something to me, I always say, "Look, can you give me a wine that doesn't taste like a cider?"
Yeah.
Because I'm not crazy about the really.
No. Katerina, you're not either.
What is interesting for me is that there's a large percentage of people that are cut out from those lists because they don't get them, they don't know them, they get scared.
Yeah.
And I'm in the industry, I know a little bit, but I think that, you know, is it more geared towards the people in the know?
No. I think in a city this size that people are curious and they want to learn about new things. And if people... we're there to interact and tell you what we like. And if you go in there with an open mind, you're going to have a good time. If you insist on drinking the things you've drank for 10 years, then it's probably not the place to come to. Because if you ask for a Sauvignon Blanc, it's not going to be what you expect.
Well, nobody should be drinking Sauvignon Blanc anyway. That probably brings us to making decisions around wine list of the year, sommelier of the year. What's, again, how our industry is as much about the drinking experiences is about the food experience and how those two interweave and marry together. How do you sit down and determine what's a good wine list?
Actually, this year we introduced a wine panel for the first time for exactly that reason, because I felt a bit underqualified. I haven't had your sommelier training, Katerina, and I felt that I needed the support of a wine panel. So we had three sommeliers.
Who'd you choose?
We have Dan Sims, Lara. Oh gosh, what's her name? Caraturo. And we had Nick Stock. So people.
Three very smart wine minds.
Yeah, and it was really good to have their input. They were looking at the wine. I put forward some that I thought could be contenders, and they discussed them, and we sort of arrived at a solution. Yeah.
So, wine list of the year for Marion, if it's right, one of Andrew McConnell's.
That's right.
Yes. The sommelier of the year, Jordan Ma, who was previously at dinner.
Yep.
And before that.
I'm not sure where he was before
that. The Dog's Bar in St Kilda.
Seriously, right. There you go.
And the regional wine list of the year, the Providence at Beechworth. I was actually surprised because I know how good the wine list is at the Royal Mail.
Yeah.
And I think the wine and the Lake House is equally as good.
They were on our list for sure, yeah.
Michael's a friend of mine. I think the cool thing about his wine list is it's not just wine. There's a lot of interesting beverages on there, like sakes and things of that nature.
Shochus and things like
that. Yeah, it's like...
Because he's got that Michael Ryan at Providence that is,
Beechworth, yes.
he has a long-standing love affair with Japan and spends a lot of time there. He goes there every year, and he's really made it his business to find out about sake. But his wife is also a winemaker, and so equally she shares the responsibility, or possibly it's more hers, I'm not entirely sure, for choosing the wines and the sake and so forth on their list. So they've got really, really interesting drinks that suits Michael's very interesting blend of sort of European technique and Japanese technique and ingredients and so on. So it's fantastic. And
Casey, is it more fun matching food to things like sake and shochu?
I feel like people should remove this idea that food has to be matched with wine, and if it's not matched with wine, then it's a cheaper alternative. There's cocktails, beer, wine,
whiskey.
Yeah, there's much better pairings out there than just wine and food.
Not saying I agree. That food and beverage,
and that's what we push for at Liberty. It's not just a wine bar. We tried not to say that when we opened, but people call it, you know.
Guilty, Your Honor.
It is. It's a wine-focused bar, but there's as much...
It's a beverage bar.
I don't know that term will catch on, though. Keep working on that.
Yeah, it's a bevy bar.
I think we said on our Instagram, it says, a place for people to drink everything. So that's...
Right.
That's better. It's an omnibar. Rather than a bevy bar. Katerina, do you pay particular attention to making sure your list is...
Well, what I've noticed... So we have to remember we are Monday to Friday lunches. So
and your point is?
but the point is that they're not doing cocktails at lunch so much. We have lots of spritzers and Negronis. That's the easy bit. But they're not coming in for cocktails. But wine is big business at my place. And 20 years ago, I remember very clearly starting with a list that was 35 bottles of wine. And somebody came in and said to me, Katerina, we would love to come and celebrate with you, but you just don't have a big enough list. We want French on there. We want, you know, Burgundies, and we want the Italians anyway. So slowly I've increased the list. And what's happened for me is that there's been a real shift against Shirazes and Cabernets, can I be honest. We sell... Pinots and Italian wine. That's what we sell. Mm. And not just Chiantis and Nebbiolos. Mm. We're moving down into Etna wines and Puglia wines where my husband comes from. I mean, you know, it's a change. And I've actually had to learn myself. So, yeah.
How fascinating.
Yeah.
It is.
Are they better with the food? Is that the reason?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And stuff that you've never heard of.
I love finding wines that are... Yeah. Just completely out there. Saparavi is one of them. It's a Georgian wine.
You should look into the natural wines. It's the whole world. Yeah,
very good. Okay, so you know I will fail in that regard. When I first discovered a Gruner Veltliner, I was just like, wow, this is celery and white pepper that I can taste in a glass. It's quite... It was quite a revelation because I drank for a long time really shit wine.
Yeah. And also the thing is, it's once again what you talked about before about pairing it with food. So if you're just going into a bar and you just want a wine, I think people will be more adventurous.
Mm.
Whereas I guess with they're pairing it with food, you've got to make sure that it works too. So, yeah, but it's great.
But there is no such thing as the perfect match. I mean, we've spent years having Pinot Noir with dark or pork belly, and we've drank, you know, Shiraz with a piece of beef, and we've had... Riesling with some prawns or some seafood. I mean, none of that should exist anymore.
No,
I think it's what your palate tells you and what you enjoy.
I don't put Sauvignon Blanc by the glass. I start to shake. That's all I know.
We've had one, and it was skin contact. It was great. It's delicious.
I actually had a Sauv Blanc in a winery in New Zealand, and I don't. I think most Sauv Blanc on my palate, and this is not a judgment, tastes like sweat. I had one in New Zealand that had 6 months on wood that was restrained and beautiful and almost poetic, and I thoroughly loved it. And it was an epiphany because I'd spent so long saying New Zealand Sauv Blanc tastes like shit to me.
Mm.
And then, of course, I was proven wrong. And that's always going to be the case, I think, with any palate. Guys, we have to go. Roz, you deserve an award for the effort that goes into this and staying thin.
Thank you.
Because I imagine you eat a lot of food.
I do eat a lot of food.
Congratulations on the fantastic guide. Casey, congratulations on the award to you and the team.
I don't think you've mentioned the award. Can I just quickly say it's the Don Levy Fitzpatrick Award, named after the late lamented Don Levy Fitzpatrick.
We talked Dog's Bar already. He was a fine man. I actually remember meeting him a couple of times as a young man and being quite impressed. So it's a great award to have, and it's for a bar that has food.
Yeah, that's right.
Don Levy changed the way we think about eating, drinking and eating. So congratulations. And Katerina, I think a long and richly deserved award for you. Congratulations. Well done.
Thank you. I'm really, really happy. And thank you once again to the guide. It's just that little tick. It doesn't change what I do every day. But
no.
It just
means keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Escape Pod will take you travelling very shortly. I'll be back next Saturday. Until then, have a fine afternoon. Enjoy this beautiful weather. You have been on Cravings. I'm Pete Dillon, and this is Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.